Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. My name is Molly McLaughlin, and I own a company that optimizes sleep through technology, accountability, and behavioral change. Each week, I'll be interviewing world-class experts ranging from doctors, innovators, and thought leaders to give actionable tips and strategies that you can implement to become a more skillful sleeper. Let's jump into your dose of practical sleep training. Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. My guest today is Dr. Matthew Dawson. He is the CEO of Wild Health. If you haven't heard of Wild Health, highly suggest checking them out. One of the things I was intrigued about was actually a client that I was working with shared that they had their first meeting with their doctor at Wild Health and was blown away. And he was like, Molly, listen, this is going to be the future of medicine. This is amazing. And so it obviously was intriguing. So I went to check out their site and was really, really excited about some of the things that they are making available to the masses. They are creating a foundation of genetic testing to really use that as a blueprint to inform some of the decision-making processes that they basically bring any user on the path or any patient on the path for a whole year span that they work with you. And they have health coaches to kind of ensure that anything that they're bringing in to have you implement to see, you know, how that's actually responding, you know, as far as different tests that they'll have you take at different points to see the difference that that is actually making quantifiably. So a little bit about our guest, Dr. Matthew Dawson, has been obsessed with performance optimization as long as he can remember. He received scholarships to play two sports in college, even with, quote, minimal talent because of his voracious reading and implementation of any fitness or nutritional techniques that would give him an edge. He continued that obsession in medical school and as a physician. He has won numerous national awards for education, innovation, and leadership. He has lectured in over 20 countries and trained thousands of other physicians through live lecture, online education, two textbooks, and even an educational app. He combines his training in genomics and functional medicine to give personalized, precise medical guidance. His obsession with performance optimization has morphed from initially athletic to now mental performance, business performance, and longevity. Whether it's a professional athlete or a grandparent optimizing their mental clarity and mobility to keep up with their grandkids, Dr. Dawson is passionate about helping everyone perform at their absolute peak. Now, I think you're going to really enjoy the conversation that we get into and some of the things that they have on the horizon to really make all of this accessible to the masses. Now, before we get into the podcast, I do want to take a quick minute to give a shout out to our sponsor, BetterHelp, or as I like to call it, a therapist in your pocket. It's the exact app that I used when I was going through my really challenging period of insomnia while traveling overseas. And the ability to maintain a consistent therapist in real life was just really not an option for me since we were jumping around from country to country. So the ability to, with using my phone, have video calls weekly with my therapist, I was paired with I connected with a great therapist right off the bat, but I do know other people who have been able to kind of shop around with some of the therapists on that app until they find a great fit for them. And in between those calls, one of the things that I found was really helpful is that you can also send voice notes, text messages, images in between that, you know, longer weekly video call so that you do have this really very real ongoing connection and support that I certainly, at least in my experience, hadn't felt with real life therapists that I had used in the past. And also the pricing structure is much more competitive than a lot of the real life therapists that you can come into contact with. So I found it to be a lot of benefits. I recommend it to a lot of people that are just kind of going through struggles in their life or just simply want to be able to up level and bring in that level of reflection and awareness into their life about what's both working and not working. And you can certainly cancel at any time. And for our sleepy community, the BetterHelp company has hooked us up with 10% off. If you go to betterhelp.com/sleepisaskill, again, betterhelp.com/sleepisaskill. And one quick shout out, if you're listening to this podcast, it's likely that you consider yourself a bit of a biohacker or just curious about how to influence your own biology. So if you're looking for other ways to further that information, wanted to share with you something coming up called the Biohacking Congress, which is running in Miami on October 16th through the 17th. You can join in person or live stream. I will be there. I will be podcasting live. I have no financial affiliation with Biohacking Congress, but I am excited about it. It's going to be a life-changing weekend. I went to one of the last ones in March of 2021, and it was fantastic. There's going to be 25 plus world-known speakers on biohacking, 20 plus health companies, digital health devices, tons of things going on, thousands of online guests or 1,000 plus online guests. And they are offering a promo code to listeners of HACK50 to get 50% off either on-site or live stream admissions. Again, no financial affiliation with Biohacking Congress, but they are a nice resource at a fairly affordable price to be able to learn more about this process of up-leveling your biology. And you can purchase those tickets at biohackingcongress.com. And welcome to the Sleep is a Skill podcast. I am so grateful that my guest, Matthew, is able to take the time to be here today. So Matthew, thank you so much. And I cannot wait to get into this conversation.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited about it.
Amazing. Amazing. Okay. So let's just jump right in because of course it's called the Sleep is a Skill podcast. So our aim is to bring as many kind of practical resources or information for people that are looking to really make a difference with their sleep. And I am really excited about the platform that you're creating. So why don't you share a little bit about, you know, the background of Wild Health, how you got into this realm and what this can do to kind of make a difference for people specifically in their sleep.
Sure. So, so Wild Health, it's not kind of a normal name for a healthcare company, but I think that's exactly what we did not want to be, which was normal when it comes to the healthcare system. So the Wild and Wild Health really kind of refers to a couple of things. One, it's about some really kind of wild and cutting edge science things that we're doing, like sequencing everyone's DNA who we see, a lot of deep genomic analysis. And then the other part of Wild is really a reference to the wilderness and nature. We think a lot of our problems in our modern day society, it has to do with just kind of a disconnection from creation and nature. And we really try to get people to live more ancestrally. So both kind of cutting edge science, but then also kind of ancient wisdom as well. So the way we got started was just kind of based on some problems and issues we were seeing. My co-founder and I, several years ago, most of what we were doing was training other physicians and kind of some high-tech things in medicine. But we were really obsessed with kind of performance optimization and prevention. And we started seeing some of the literature coming around DNA, genomics, and actually being able to do personalized medicine. And when that started coming out, he also just had kind of a really tough issue that came up with his health. His lipids were kind of through the roof, really kind of dangerous levels. And in his journey with that, his doctor advised him to go on a certain diet, which he got worse on. His doctor put him on a statin and he had myopathy, muscle breakdown. And when we sequenced his DNA, as he was going through this, we saw that, oh, wow, he needed to be on the exact opposite diet than I do or that most people do. And we saw that he had a SNP, this single nucleotide polymorphism, made him almost guaranteed to get myopathy and muscle breakdown from a statin, which his doctor put him on. And we were kind of upset by this. We're like, why did his doctor not know this? And then we realized, wait a second, no one is practicing this way. The science was there, but no one was doing it. And that's when we really kind of dove in and went all in on learning everything we could about DNA and genomics and actually practicing personalized medicine. So now when we see a patient, what we do is we take a very holistic approach, but we really go deep. So everyone, we sequence their DNA. That's kind of like your operating system. And so we look at all the different kind of unique variables you have, what advantages, disadvantages you have, but your DNA is not your destiny. Like turning everything that you do, you eat, you're exposed to, your actions, turn those good and bad genes on and off. So we also do a really deep dive into your blood work to see where you are. We look at your microbiome, and then we add a long conversation on because who you, not just what you eat, but who you eat with, when, like all of your other, the rest of your life is critically important. And based on all of that, we come up with a plan to optimize your health. And we've been doing this for a few years now, and it's just been incredibly fun to be able to apply this science of personalized medicine.
Yeah, I mean, it feels very exciting and something very new from a place of bringing about this holistic functional medicine approach with the element of testing, layering in the genomic approach to a level that I'm not often seeing, because that seems to be some of the divide for so many of the people that that I'm working with that are really struggling with their sleep. But there's that missing of how to create that sort of relationship with a functional medicine doctor or what have you that's also affordable. I mean, so some of your price points feel accessible to, you know, no matter, there's different options, there's tiered approach, but that was one of the things that got me excited about this, because I'm, you know, I came from a background of not a lot of money, and that's often in the thinking for me is how to help people not just close off this opportunity or this possibility of going down this approach of really tailored medicine because of the financial obstacle. So how have you been able to kind of provide this at certain, a bit more affordable price points and accessible price points? I know it's, you kind of have a cool model where it's not just you see someone once, but it's an ongoing relationship that seems to be built. And again, I'm just learning about this too. So kind of sharing how this all looks.
That was really important to us, Molly. So when we started, I mean, what I just described to you was intense, and it would take us like 10 hours of prep work. We'd have hundreds of pages of DNA data, microbiome, blood work, and it would take us so much time, and a physician's time is expensive, that although we were getting great results, it bothered us how expensive it was initially. Initially, it was all pro athletes and CEOs, and it was a couple thousand dollars a month when we started. It was ridiculous. And it bothered us because I grew up poor, and where I grew up, no one could afford this. And so we realized that was a big problem immediately. And we decided the only way to kind of mitigate that was really to use the tools we have today, technology and software. So over the last couple of years, we've taken everything that all that data crunching and all that time, and we've automated. We hired the lady who started the data informatics program for Humana. We hired other data scientists, software developers, and we automated all the data crunching to where we got it to point to where now we can offer as low as less than $100 a month, or a really affordable rate. And we're getting ready to do a trial, even taking people's insurance. It'll probably be a few months from now, but we really want this to be something that anyone and everyone could do in the future. Right now, it still is a cash-based thing, but we feel pretty confident that with the software in place, we can actually do this in a way that everyone can afford it very, very soon.
Wow. Okay. So accessibility is there, optionality is there. If you want, you know, kind of more handholding, you can pay a bit more, but still relative to a lot of the, you know, I used to live in New York City or different major, you know, metropolitan areas. If you're going to be investing in some of these, you know, testing and what have you, the expectation is quite a upfront investment. So it sounds like this is a way to make it approachable. And so what are some of those? So what would this look like, and how does that play into this conversation around sleep for people? So they come to you, things are not working. Presumably the sleep is that concern, one of the concerns. And so what does that process sort of look like? What could they expect?
Sure. So whether someone has come to us with sleep as an issue or an autoimmune disease or anything, we take the same approach, which is we start with a very holistic approach. I think one of the mistakes we make in medicine is someone has a migraine, we immediately think about the brain, and it could be so many other things. If whatever complaint someone has, we immediately go down to that in a reductionist view. But we really start holistically. We try to optimize everything. Once we do that, it's very interesting. We find that a lot of the specific complaints people have just get better when you just optimize the body in general. So we start there. We would optimize your diet. So we may, and it's complicated. We may find that, for example, you have a VDR SNP, meaning you may need more vitamin D, but then we also look and see what is your vitamin D level. And then we also talk about, are you in Florida in the summer or Alaska in the winter? And all of those factors come into the recommendation. So once we've done the holistic optimization, that's when we dive in to the individual things. And part of that holistic evaluation and optimization really has to do with sleep. I say to our patients all the time that sleep is the number one lever that we have to pull that's going to affect everything else. So from day one, we're talking about sleep. We're talking about it in a larger context of the entire person.
That's amazing. So my understanding too is that you also pull some of the, you know, so a lot of our listeners are tend to be pretty well-versed on the sleep trackers. They might even have multiple sleep trackers, or at least tracking curious. So what might they expect with the integration of their tracking data?
Sure. So we generally recommend, so we say, if you wear an Aura tracker and you like it, that's great. We can work with it. We like the Aura ring. I have an Aura ring. I think it's maybe my favorite possession. It's great. And so if someone doesn't have one already, that's usually the one that we'll recommend. With our software, we're actually within the next 30 days, we're going to have an update, which is going to be really incredible, where we'll be pulling in all the data from your wearables, Fitbit, Oura Ring, Apple Watch, all of these. And so that wearable data will be part of the program as well. And it already is, but on a more manual basis. Right now, we'll follow people's Aura data, and we really use that as an objective marker. Everything we do when we want to optimize something for someone, when someone has a goal, we say, that's great, you've got this goal. How are we going to objectively measure that? Because we don't just give you advice and say, do this, and then we'll see you later. We say, do this. We're going to measure the outcomes this way at this time, and we try to be very objective about it. So the Aura Ring or other kind of trackers, whatever it is, allows us to do these N of one experiments with people and try interventions and see what works instead of just guessing and then seeing what happens.
And so people are taking some of these health tests, certainly the genomics, and looking at certain blood work that they're pulling in. And is that kind of parsed out throughout the course of, say, you know, signing for a year plan?
Yeah, for sure. So how it works is we really try to kind of globally optimize people. But like in that first visit, we'll identify what are your top three goals? Then what are the objective measures where we're going to be able to solve for those? And then we retest maybe in a couple months. So for example, if someone wants to lose weight, so we're going to talk about optimizing your diet, exercise, and sleep, all of these. But when we talk about diet, it's going to be, we're going to have specific recommendations based on your DNA and blood work. But those are precision recommendations. They're not perfect. In medicine right now, when you tell your doctor you have a problem, they kind of make a guess based on statistics and epidemiology and then hope that it works. We make what I would say is a much better guess. It's based on your DNA and other things, but we still want to measure the result. So sleep, for example, we would look at your genetics and we would talk to you as well and hear about your routines and come up with a plan. But then we're going to be measuring that as well. And we're going to be measuring it weekly and monthly and making sure it gets better. And then we'll also be changing variables one at a time. So we can kind of do some good scientific experiments with you to see what actually works well for you. Because when it comes to sleep, there's so many things. There's hundreds of things that you can do, and you hear about all these biohacks and things to do all the time. And they work for some people, and some people they don't. So we want to find out what works for the individual, not just for most people.
Amazing. So the setup is this year-long kind of period of transformation for your health. And then throughout the course of that, it's part of that accountability, part of that behavioral element. One of the reasons that I was even curious to learn more was that one of my clients that I was working with, he had just done his kind of onboarding with you guys. And he was mentioning how, yeah, we spoke and so now I'm going to try some intermittent fasting. And this, I know, after having a conversation with his doctor and then, you know, aimed that in with Wild Health. And it was so cool because, you know, usually when I have clients that are speaking with their doctor, they don't come back saying that they're doing IF or anything of that nature. I mean, so to bring it, I mean, these are important elements that can make just such a difference in overall health and well-being. Then there was a whole other rundown of many, many other things for him to take on and to, you know, practice in his own life. But it's just a very exciting possibility. So from that place, is it building that level of accountability? And how does that look?
Sure. So we actually have physicians and health coaches that work with a patient. We think that teaming up of the two is really important. And it's really kind of a three-way partnership between the patient, the physician, and the health coach. So you see the health coach more often. So the physician and the health coach and the patient come up with a plan. And then the health coach is there for the accountability and also some interpretation. A lot of times we will say something like, hey, eat more cruciferous vegetables. Well, someone may not know what those are. Someone may not know recipes for that. So there's a lot of translation and interpretation that the health coach does, as well as accountability, because we can come up with the best plan in the world, but if someone isn't able to follow it for whatever reason, whatever roadblocks they hit, then it's not going to be useful for them. So the health coaches are a really important part of what we do. And we actually have because what we do is so different, it's new, it's personalized medicine, we have a training program. So we have a fellowship as well, where we have about 100, I think, physicians and health coaches going through it right now, or over the last little over a year. So we actually train health coaches and physicians as well, because it is such a new thing that we're doing.
Absolutely. So I'm wondering if you could speak a little, because I love what you're saying too, that your aim is to ensure that you're not tunnel vision on certain areas or symptoms, and you know, you're looking at the whole picture. And on this conversation with sleep, are there certain things that you are really cueing into from the genetics perspective with sleep, certain things that are examples to share of ways that people have been able to really transform that difficulty with their sleep as it relates to this information?
Sure. So we definitely start out with some baseline information from the genomics and the conversation. So if you want to get specific about the DNA part, there's quite a few SNPs that we would look at. There's some SNPs related to chronotype. So we can help people kind of determine which chronotype they are, kind of what time they should go to bed in general. And everything I tell you, we also then back up with actual experiments with patients. So we can make a suggestion about a chronotype looking at the genetics, but then we also want to test that by having someone go to bed different times and seeing when they get the best quality sleep. We also, there are certain SNPs, for example, an ADORA 2A SNP. If someone has this, then we know that caffeine can disrupt sleep, but with an ADORA 2A, it's much more so. It can have a bigger detriment. So we really stress for those people to decrease their caffeine or take it earlier in the day. And then you may look at something like their actual caffeine metabolism. If someone is a slow or intermediate metabolizer and they have an ADORA 2A, then we really may start thinking about alternatives, period, for caffeine, mm-hmm. because it's going to be a real disruptor. So all of these things kind of play together. There's also things like an NPAS2 polymorphism that really means that you're eating less than 3 hours from bedtime is going to have a worse effect on you than other people. So there's a bit of a list there, and we can make the first general recommendations. And then from there, that's when we start doing the testing kind of one variable at a time.
Very cool. Okay. And have there been examples for you of patients coming through that have just really been struggling with their sleep? Certain people that listen to the podcast might be any level of difficulty with their sleep. So they might really be dealing with insomnia and really just at their wit's end of what to do in this area. Or they might be really just optimizers and they've got the Oura Ring and the Whoop and the BioStrap and the Apple and blah, blah, and they're just looking for the next level. But have you seen interesting kind of case studies of people really transforming this area?
For sure. And every single person is different. So
exactly.
I can tell you for myself, when I got my Oura Ring and started tracking, there were several things I really noticed. I mean, I know all the biohacks, all the different things to do and to take, but I'm also a person that doesn't really feel the difference a lot of times. Like if I take or try something, I need an objective measure, like to be able to see how much deep sleep REM sleep and the quality. Yeah. So for myself, for example, I found a couple of very simple things, an Uller device, just being cooler at night, that had a massive effect. And then a genomics-based one, I noticed when I looked at my DNA, I didn't mention this one earlier, but I had a FAAH SNP, that's a fatty acid amide hydrolase SNP, that made me more likely to benefit from CBD than most people. Mm-hmm. So when I actually tried that, it made a massive impact. And I found that out from my genetics. But for most people, we generally try to do, Molly, before we start making recommendations, is actually diagnose what is the problem. Like, is someone having a lack of deep sleep? Are they having a problem getting to sleep? Is it a lack of REM sleep? Are they waking up in the middle of the night? Because depending on what the problem is, affects what the intervention we go with.
Got it. Okay. Really interesting too about some of the experiences that you've seen in your own life. Have there been, if you were to think of particular steps, and I know that this is difficult for, because as you pointed to, and this is exactly what you're doing, is the aim to make this really bio-individual. And are there kind of go-to steps that you find yourself suggesting for people, whether it's the supplement or behavioral change arena?
Sure. And I can give you specific examples of if someone says this, then we try that. That may be helpful. In general, we try to really cover the basics first. Yeah. And this may seem really basic for your audience, who are probably experts in this, but it's not for everyone. And so the way I generally talk to our patients is, let's talk about ancestrally, like what would it be like for you to sleep 1,000 years ago? And we know a few things. Like, people talk a lot of times about having it dark, having it cold, having it quiet, and then the timing of going to sleep as well. So if you And so one picture I like to paint for some people is like, imagine 1,000 years ago or several thousand years ago, sleeping in a cave. It's going to be cool at nighttime or in this cave. It's going to be dark. It's going to be either quiet, or if there is noise, it's going to be kind of white noise, like a stream going through. And you're going to go to bed at the same time. You're going to go to bed with the sun and get up with the sun as well. If you just focus on those basics of going to bed at the same time, getting up at the same time, having it cool in your room about 65 degrees, everyone's a little different, having it quiet and having it dark. Very few people actually do that. If you do that, I think 90% of the time, the issues resolve themselves.
Yeah.
Now, they don't always. And so if they don't, then it's what is the problem you're having. So if someone, for example, if we look at their Oura Ring data, they come back after tracking and they're not getting enough deep sleep. Well, the first thing I say is, what time are you going to bed? And it's almost always they're going to bed too late. We know that we have an appetite for deep sleep in the first half of the night. And most people are going to bed close to midnight. I'm saying that, look, it's called midnight for a reason. You should probably have been in bed asleep for maybe a few hours. If they have a problem with REM sleep on their Oura Ring, then the first question I ask is, are you using an alarm clock? And usually the answer is yes. And I say, okay, you have an appetite for REM sleep at the end of the night, you're cutting that off prematurely. If they have a problem going, not falling asleep or waking up in the middle of the night, in our society, usually that's stress related. So we start talking about mindfulness, yoga nidra, some techniques like that to solve that problem. So it always depends on the actual issue they have. And then further down the road, we could talk about supplements and things, but I try to reserve that for last, because usually it's not that you're not going to sleep because you have a deficiency of magnesium or phosphatidylserine or something like that. You have other issues going on that you're trying to correct with those substances. So we usually save those for later.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's fantastic. And then, so bringing those about, do you also work with people with other metrics like, you know, HRV and heart rate and some of those? Do you see real changes there?
Absolutely. So it's really interesting. We just did some data analysis on our patients, and our patients who come to us with kind of lower HRV, just got this back from our data scientists. We increase HRV on average by about 35%, which is pretty amazing.
That is amazing.
And a lot of it is due to this sleep optimization. Also has to do with exercise and other things, but the sleep optimization makes a big difference for that.
Oh, completely. So what about for people that might have some sleep abnormalities, whether, you know, apneas, difficulty just, you know, trending towards mouth breathing, snoring, things of that nature? Are there things that you can help facilitate, whether at-home sleep tests or anything of that nature?
For sure. There are a lot of great at-home sleep tests now. It's funny you mentioned mouth breathing. It's one of the most remarkable things we kind of figured out in the last year or so, is just having people put paper tape on their mouth at night. We see a really nice bump in HRV and just the quality of the sleep. So that's usually a pretty simple thing we'll start with. And if someone really can't tolerate that, there's a lot of snoring, those types of things, then they probably do need an evaluation with an actual sleep study, potentially going to see the dentist as well, related to kind of dental issues.
Okay. And so are you able to help facilitate any of that, or is it something that they'll need to work with their local doctors on, or how does that look?
There are some at-home ones that we've used in the past. Mm-hmm. In general, we usually try to start with seeing if someone can actually, if they have a sleep doctor there locally as well. But we certainly can do that with a at-home sleep study as well.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, and the reason I'm asking that too is just one of the things I've seen for people with making these differences with their sleep, if they are in that group, I love what you said, that often, you know, 90% of it is just bringing in these basics, but actually living by this, which it feels, you know, it can be put in a basic category, but the application is rare often. So then when we do make that difference, then often, to your point, 90% large percentage can be really handled. But then for that group that is still struggling, one of the things that I've seen is just something about the hurdle or the obstacle of going to a sleep facility or what have you. But the more we can make that, you know, easy for people to do, and I think it's exciting too, because there's more and more wearables coming out to be able to help further facilitate that, you know, kind of process of testing that. But that's, you know, walking people through that is great. It's amazing.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. When it comes to actually formal sleep studies, like in a sleep lab, I've always been conflicted about that, because sure, it's the gold standard, but it's, to me, Like if someone gives me, goes and does a sleep study and they give me this data, I know how uncomfortable and weird that experience was and how non-reflective of the regular night of sleep is. And I almost feel like I get a better picture of their sleep to help with interventions when I've looked at their Aura data for a month and when I talk to maybe their significant other as well about their snoring and things, and just a really good history as well as that Aura data, I feel like gives maybe as much or better information than going and sleeping in a strange lab for a night with wires hooked to you and everything else that goes along with the sleep study.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, I mean, that's why it's an exciting time. The more that tech is able to be brought into the home. So then, you know, in your own comfortable environment, we can just see, are there those apneas happening, you know, night after night, and to make that difference. Cause I hear you, there's so much to be gleaned from these different trackers. So really, really exciting stuff. Are there other pieces of tech that you lean into for, to really further monitor what the kind of absolutes are, what people are eating, glucose monitors, any of those other type of pieces of tech right now?
For sure. We do use a lot of CGM monitors. It's really interesting to get that data. One of the things that people know pretty quickly when they wear a CGM is that the same food will have a dramatically different effect on them depending on how well their sleep was the night before, which can be motivating and kind of eye-opening as well. So we do definitely love CGMs. Those are probably, I mean, the Oura Ring and the CGM are probably the two devices right now that we use the most that have the biggest impact for people.
Completely agree. Oh my goodness. And because people with you are working with having the access to both the physicians and the health coaches, then are you able to help make the connection between prescribing CGM, or is that a tricky area?
No, that's easy enough. If you don't have the indication, diabetes or whatever, then you're going to have to pay for it out of pocket. But they've become less expensive. When I first started wearing CGMs, it was really only the Dexcom. And it was crazy. It was $900 or something. But now for $150 to $200 for several weeks, you can at least wear it for a little. It's not affordable enough to where you'd want to do it long term. And so the way we do it is, if we're going to have a patient wear it, we try to really, like I said before, design some experiments. Let's try different foods, different times of day, and let's figure out how we're going to use it. So it's not just using it, we're not just wearing it for 2 weeks, but we get some good information and learn some things from it. It's kind of a learning tool for the patient.
Absolutely. And then as it relates to sleep, to your point, I love what you said about the beginning to notice the difference the following day after poor sleep. And then also getting to see some of those wake ups or difficulty falling asleep with the, you know, after following a really high level of instability with their glucose, it's incredible to bring that in to the black and white side of it, to be able to see that. That can often make such a difference behaviorally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting data to have for sure.
Amazing. Okay, cool. And then so, do you anticipate that people will, that they can make a remarkable difference with this 12-month plan, or do you foresee it being something that you'd like to have in the future for people just kind of like ongoingly to further optimize, or what do you foresee the kind of trajectory of this?
Yeah, we find that the most, when you get the biggest benefits and the most power is in a long-term relationship, when you really establish a relationship with a physician and health coach who can really follow you over time. Because while we may think we can kind of quote unquote optimize in the course of a year, the fact is every year we get a year older and new things crop up and things happen in life. And so in our mind, that relationship ongoing is important. When we first started out, we had just such really cool information we're giving people around their genomics and how to optimize. And a lot of people came to us and thought of us kind of as an excursion. They have their regular doctor and they come to us for like a fun vacation and then go back home to their doctor. We really, and that's fine when it was as expensive as it was. We really have tried to design what we do to really be your medical home, to be your primary care doctor over time. So we can be the physician that takes care of all the basic things for you and the optimization at the same time. So we really have designed our program to be something where we follow you longitudinally.
Got it. Okay. And in alignment with this like relationship, you know, beginning to now think of this as like an ongoing relationship, I know you also have on your site about ketamine. And we haven't done too much of this on the podcast, actually. And we do want to start going into this conversation around some of these alternative approaches for people to make a difference with some things that might be influencing their sleep. And I'm wondering if you could share a little bit about how that looks, what, you know, how the process of leaning into something like ketamine could potentially make a difference for people with their sleep.
Sure. We ketamine is a really interesting tool. It helps a lot of people. So many of the problems that we have, we think are physical, and they really have a root in kind of psychological and mental. And we really lean into the mental health of people too, helping them with mindfulness and just getting over past trauma and issues that they have. And a lot of our sleep problems have to do with depression, anxiety, PTSD, past trauma, things like that. And ketamine, until MDMA and other things are legal, ketamine right now is really kind of the most powerful tool that we have. The benefits for PTSD, treatment-resistant depression, those types of things are remarkable, much better than some of the medication that you're on every day long-term. So we do offer that for our patients who need it as well. And it's just been tremendous. I've been interested in this for well over a decade, even when I was in residency doing emergency medicine. I remember I wanted to do a trial with the psychiatry department for our suicidal patients that came in and give them ketamine and see how long they had to be admitted and how they did. And I couldn't get the psychiatry department on board, but soon afterwards, Yale published like basically the exact study I wanted to do with remarkable results. And just the chronic pain literature, PTSD, all of these things, ketamine can be really helpful for. And so it's something that we definitely want to offer our patients when it's indicated.
Wow, very exciting. Have you seen for people when kind of embarking on this process of bringing in ketamine and you have on your site as little as one visit? So even if they only did it once, have they been able to, you know, can you measure changes in some of their Oura Ring data, or is it ongoing process?
Yeah, everyone's different. I hate to sound like a broken record with that.
No, but it's true, right? That's part of the model too, which is fantastic.
One thing with ketamine, which you'll see with clinics out there, is most people do kind of like series of six. And that's because a lot of the original studies, they would do six treatments over the course of a few weeks. And so that's what a lot of people have adopted. And for a lot of ketamine clinics, that also is a good business model, right? You sell six at a time instead of one. But what we found is that it doesn't always take that many. And it's not, that's just how the original studies were designed. And so if someone gets better and has the relief they need after one or two or three, that's totally fine as well. Some people do need more. Some people have more severe disease. Usually what you find with ketamine is there's usually a moment in time where people kind of break through. Sometimes it's after that first one, sometimes after the third. Sometimes you have to do a full series of six, but it's hard to predict when that's going to be. It's an individual thing for sure.
Got it. Okay, very cool. So then a couple of things. One, I'm sure people listening now are intrigued by ways that this could be something that they could lean into to make a difference with their health and then presumably their sleep as well. And then one of the things that we found is that people, they also want to know, the people that are coming on this podcast are so enmeshed in ways to improve their overall health and presumably their sleep that people want to know, what are they doing? So as far as the three questions that we ask everyone now, the first one is for you of, what does your current nightly sleep routine look like right now?
So as I mentioned earlier, I try to be kind of as ancestral as possible. Now, the problem is I have four kids, which makes that, which kind of throws a wrench in everything. So a lot of my nighttime routine revolves around that. But in my perfect world where I don't have a three-year-old who isn't going to sleep or something like that, what I prefer to do at night is really kind of finish my work pretty early before it gets dark. And then as it gets dark, in my mind, the ideal way to wind down is to read an actual book or spend quality time with my wife or talking to someone. But we have big windows in our house and in our bedroom, and frequently I'll read by those windows until I can't read the book anymore. So as the sun's going down, it's amazing how, if you have no other ambient light, as the sun goes down and you're reading that relaxing event, you just kind of get sleepy with the sun as it's disappearing. And in my mind, that's the best way. Other things is, like I mentioned, temperature is really important. My wife likes it a lot warmer than I do. So that's why the Uller device that is underneath has just been a game changer for me. I try to minimize the things that I take at night. I definitely, when you say what is on your proverbial nightstand, for me, it's more about what's not, which is no phone out of the room, no alarm clock in the room. The only kind of device is the Oura Ring. I may sometimes take magnesium at night just because it's just such a low risk thing. There's just almost no reason not to take magnesium.
Yeah.
Other than that, I don't take very much. I think everything can be a tool if used correctly. So there's been times where I remember at the very beginning of COVID, for example, it's so many patients and so many issues, and it was just a crazy time.
Yeah.
And the cortisol, I noticed I was waking up super early with so much to do. And so phosphatidylserine was useful there for a period. And so different times, different tools will be useful, but in general, it's pretty minimal. Try to be as ancestral as possible. No light, low temperature, very quiet in general.
Oh, I love that. You're preaching to the choir with, and particularly your stack, you know, of leading into the Oura Ring, the Uller, you know, some of the CGMs, like really kind of keeping it clean on some of these things and really leading into the behavioral practice of things, awareness. It's fantastic. So you kind of answered that nightstand question for me perfectly. So then the last question would really be, what has been sort of your biggest sleep aha moment or biggest change to your sleep game?
Yeah. So when we first started doing Wild Health, one of the things we sometimes will send is an epigenetic age test. So look at DNA methylation, because one of our big goals is to really kind of slow down and reverse aging, because it's the biggest risk factor for any of the diseases. So we were sending a lot of these tests. And one thing that I noticed very on my background prior, I was working in the emergency department. So I had a lot of emergency department friends. And I noticed that every single ER doctor I ever ran epigenetic test on was older than their chronologic age. And I'm convinced it was because of the shift work and,
yes,
and lack of sleep. And when I saw that, I started noticing it. I started with other people and just kind of think about and look about their sleep and their job before running the test. And it was remarkable how tightly it correlated with people whose job, or for whatever reason, they're not getting good sleep. Their biologic age is just much older than their chronologic age. And just seeing that really kind of solidified for me just how important it was. And that's, I think, what prompted me to start looking at the literature. And then when I did, it was just overwhelming. I mean, people who get less than 6 hours of sleep a night have a 48% higher chance of having a heart attack, have a 4 times increased risk of death in the next 10 years. And when you start looking at that research, it's just like, yeah, there's nothing more important than sleep.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Completely. And I hear you on that readout and the age markers. I mean, I work with a lot of professional poker players that are, you know, effectively shift workers with a lot of stress, both, you know, eustress stress and actual stress, and depending on how things are rolling for them. So I absolutely have seen some, you know, similar elements there. So sharing that is definitely an aha moment for the commitment of the, because, you know, often some of the things that we're asking people to do to improve their sleep, to your point around ancestral, from an ancestral perspective, is so clear, but from a perspective of modern society, it's out of the bell curve. So having that why, that strong why, when you see those numbers, I mean, you can't argue with that. So very, very powerful. So how can people learn more about Wild Health, what's coming, anything on the horizon we should be aware of, ways to stay involved, all of that?
Sure. So wildhealth.com has everything there. So we do have a podcast. We usually release a podcast once a week. We have a fellowship, a training program as well. When we first started, we had two big problems. One was that we had more patients coming to us than we could see. And two, it was just like how much time it took. And so we attacked the time problem with the software, and then we attacked the too many patients problem by deciding we needed to train others. Like, we really feel like this is how medicine should be practiced. So we have a year-long fellowship. It's at wildhealthfellowship.com, where physicians or just anyone interested who wants to be a health coach and really kind of get into that, where they can go through a training program to learn all the genomics and functional medicine aspects.
Amazing. Well, I so acknowledge you for the work that you're doing and for your commitment to make it as accessible as possible. I'm really excited to follow your journey and what you're creating. So, you know, just thank you so much for what you're doing and for taking the time.
Thank you, Molly. It was a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I completely agree. And I'm going to stay closely tuned into all the things that you have coming. So, you know, keep on with the innovating.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Sleep is a Skill podcast, the number one podcast for people who want to take their sleep skills to the next level. Every Monday, I send out something that I call Molly's Monday Obsessions, containing everything that I'm obsessing over in the world of sleep. Head on over to sleepisaskill.com to sign up.